Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Sam Karp, Vice President of Programs at the California Healthcare Foundation. We are pleased to underwrite today's program. You can find the Commonwealth Club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org and the foundation at chcf.org. It's now my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Anish Chopra, the Chief Technology Officer of the United States and the first person to hold this position. Anish also serves as Assistant to the President and Associate Director for Technology within the Office of Science and Technology Policy. Prior to his appointment by the President, he served as Secretary of Technology for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Over the past several months, I've had the distinct pleasure and opportunity to work with Anish. We happen to co-chair a national work group. I've seen close up his passion, his energy, and his commitment, and his inspiring but yet practical leadership for enabling the use of technology to help form our society and our economy. In the healthcare, the use of technology has extraordinary challenges and extraordinary opportunities. How do we use IT to most effectively improve the quality of care while at the same time trying to lower the cost of care, the cost of which we all know is just not sustainable? How can we promote public-private partnerships like the one that Governor Schwarzenegger introduced yesterday to create the California Telehealth Network that has a dozen different public and private partners? How can we encourage the innovation and the entrepreneurship that has been developing social media tools and smartphone apps that are allowing patients to be much more engaged in their own care? These are the opportunities that we have using technology in healthcare, and this is the topic that Anish Chopra is going to address today. I think the largest challenge that we have is how are we going to enroll and provide for the needs of some 40 million Americans who are going to become newly eligible for health coverage under the Affordable Care Act. There are many parts of our nation, underserved medical communities, where many of these people live. How are those needs particularly going to get met? I think that you will agree with me when you hear Anish that he brings a certain amount of energy and excitement and will provoke your thinking. So before I introduce Anish, let me introduce Tom Nesbitt, who's going to be the moderator for the question period. Tom is the Associate Vice Chancellor for Strategic Technologies and Alliances at the UC Davis Medical Center. So now join me in welcoming Anish Chopra.
All right. Come on, brother. Get a handshake. Come on now. I must say, first of all, thank you to the Commonwealth Club for having me, and a specific thank you to Sam, who has been an incredible partner in this journey of ensuring we get the standards right so that we can enroll those individuals in a manner that is befitting our 21st century approach to the public sector. I want to say at the outset that the opportunities and the challenges before us are both exciting and real. We have challenges, but we have opportunities that will overcome them. And my ambitions today are really threefold: to provide a framework for all of you in understanding how the Obama administration is thinking about the intersection of healthcare and technology. Number two, to have specific action items that might allow for you to participate in this journey. And three, perhaps most importantly, if Tom does his job, that we get good questions from the audience so that I can listen to the concerns that are on your mind so I can take back to Washington areas of opportunity for us to improve. So without much further ado, let me begin by the spirit of innovation and technology and healthcare with just an excitement around how we see our president's focus on this given topic. If you hadn't seen this particular video, I thought I'd share just a couple seconds of it to demonstrate the president's commitment to technology.
Hello, everybody. I want to talk with you about a new consumer website.
If it would work.
Healthcare.gov. It's a good resource for understanding the new law, and it offers a few simple tools to help you take your healthcare into your own hands.
I share that clip. By the way, a show of hands, how many of you have seen this clip online or on somewhere? A few of you. Just a few of you? Man, it's the President of the United States. I got to tell you, this got me goosebumps, and maybe I'm a little bit of a geek. Just a quick background on this slide before I get into the rest of my remarks. The Affordable Care Act passed in the spring, as many of you recall. We had in the bill a requirement to stand up a website by July 1. And that website was meant to simplify what the health reform bill would mean to the American people. It particularly called out a usable catalog of all the available health insurance options that might be available in your zip code for your community, in your community. And that we had to have this thing stood up in our ambition in a manner that befits the president's commitment to the use of advanced information technologies so that this would be, hopefully, a tool that people could use today while we await some of the regulatory improvements that will come between now and the year 2014. The president's commitment to technology in this particular case study was evident in three parts. Number one, we assigned the responsibility to launch this program to our chief technology officer in the Department of Health and Human Services, an entrepreneur and my dear friend Todd Park, who had helped co-found a very successful internet company called Athena Health and brought that spirit of entrepreneurship to bear so that when we launched this program, literally in weeks' time, it had the spirit of the American entrepreneur. Second, we embodied the principles of consumer experience design. Rather than a static website for the sake of generic information, we found key consumer segments that would have unique concerns about how this would mean for someone who's caring for a child, what would this mean for an elderly couple, a small business owner who's looking to shop for affordable health care. And all of those options had to be taken into account in the execution of this platform. And the third aspect of this, and perhaps most exciting of it, was to see where we could find an initial application that would deliver immediate value to those seeking to find affordable health insurance in their community. And it was to take advantage of a policy lever we had to, for the first time in America's insurance industry, to gather the data on how to price health insurance plans that are relevant for you. It isn't as easy as buying a plane ticket, which I used to come here to my visit, when shopping for health insurance. Many of our small business owners rely on brokers, and they rely on that channel, if you will, to provide them the information they need to make thoughtful decisions. Well, by October of this year, we will have stood up a pricing engine available on healthcare.gov that will make it available today for small business owners and single individuals in the marketplace to shop for those health plans that meet their needs in today's environment. It's part of the president's overarching commitment that we have a new model of government operations, a model that's more open. And that means, in our vantage point, we're more transparent, we're more participatory, that is, we listen to your voice, and we're more collaborative in the execution of government. Let's carry those themes through in this framework now. If I could find a way to get out of that video screen and see if I can bring us back to the slide deck. Thank you. Whoa, here we go. We'll wait for that to flip up. The president, in September of last year, released a framework. We call it the Strategy for American Innovation. And it was a framework for how we would have a long-term commitment to economic growth and sustainable job creation, if you will. The president's strategy has direct relevance to the discussion at hand. And so I'd call out in the strategy an important component of how we catalyze breakthroughs for national priorities. And I will specifically highlight, as the goal for today's lecture, health IT application innovations that drive lower costs, improved quality, and improved patient satisfaction. So without much further ado, let's talk through the framework for our current approach in the administration. We see, broadly speaking, three levers that will deliver on the promise of healthcare IT. Those levers are, first, how we catalyze provider adoption or accelerate provider adoption. Second, how we can promote data interoperability. And third, how do we foster continued application innovation? A word on each of the three components, and the slides in the remainder of this presentation will highlight each of those component parts. On provider adoption, we have pursued three key policy levers. First, the President's Economic Recovery Act incentive program, over $20 billion of reimbursement incentives to providers, doctors and hospitals, for the adoption of healthcare IT and for demonstration of the use of that technology in a meaningful manner. Second, the ability to take more of a flexible approach to the technology itself. One of the challenges we face in Washington is too often we might be prescribing yesterday's technology. We don't necessarily work or operate at technology pace. So how might we create a policy framework that encourages and supports the continued improvements in the technology architecture? So here we highlight, I'll highlight more, our work on modularity and modular applications. Third, perhaps most important, we're going to talk about this, I'm assuming, in the Q&A, we cannot move the needle on healthcare IT if we don't thoughtfully address the privacy and security concerns of the American people. And I'll share with you our approach. Second, in the area of data interoperability, we have three strategies to promote interoperability, and I like to think of them as light, medium, and heavy. Light is what can we do right now. Medium, what can we do with modest technological improvements? And heavy, how might we ensure a more thoughtful and structured framework for the end state vision we all have, where data is flowing in a safe, secure manner to ensure the patients get the treatment they need and physicians and providers have the information they need to make judgments. The third component of the framework is application innovation. And here I'll highlight more specifically kind of the broader themes that are surrounding our health IT programs but are very relevant to it. And those broader components are as follows. One, spurring grassroots action for health performance improvement community by community. Second, meaningfully addressing the nation's payment systems so that we actually reward quality of care that would create the market conditions to support more technological innovation. And third, part of the comments Sam just made, ensuring that we have a vibrant information technology infrastructure that includes not just physical infrastructure in the sense of broadband capacity, but also research and development infrastructure for continued improvement. Now, a word on each of these components before I sit down and take your questions. I hope by now the two words that matter most in the healthcare sector and in the relationship between technology and healthcare are meaningful use. This is the term of art that has been introduced into the nomenclature, but you might be wondering, what does that mean? In July of this past year, I'm pleased to report we published a final set of rules about what it is to be a meaningful user of healthcare IT. And broadly speaking, it means that providers do the following five things. They focus on quality, safety, and efficiency in healthcare. They engage patients and families. They coordinate with other stakeholders in the ecosystem. They focus on improvements to public and population health. And they do so in a manner that respects privacy and security. I want to deep dive on one of those categories to give you a flavor for what this entails by focusing on patient engagement. There are four specific provisions in meaningful use that I thought to call to your attention. Number one, patients are entitled to timely access to an electronic copy of their data. Two, a clinical summary should be made available after every visit. Three, alerts and reminders for preventive and follow-up care should be made available. And fourth, electronic access to patient-specific education resources should be part of the equation. Now, to be fair and to be honest, the framework allows some flexibility so providers may mix and match which of the 25 components of meaningful use they wish to apply for. So a subset, perhaps 20 of those 25 conditions have to be met. So not at all providers will focus on these four provisions in patient engagement. But with your participation and your agitation and inspirement and empowerment, perhaps that may be part of the way our ecosystem will adopt moving forward. On the spirit of modular applications, part of our healthcare IT program is the involvement or investment in research and development projects that will catalyze breakthroughs. I highlight here the case study of our SHARP program. Four research centers that have been funded by at $15 million each over the next 4 years that will demonstrate breakthroughs in healthcare IT. One of those grant recipients has developed a framework called SMART Applications, stands for the Substitutable Medical Application Framework. You see a graphical depiction on the left-hand side that explains what this is, but if I could say it even simpler, in their own journal article that appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2009, lead authors Ken Mandel and Zach Cohen outlined their model, which is to develop the equivalent of the iPhone App Store for health applications. What is so exciting about this particular program is that they have a technical strategy that will demonstrate results by the spring of 2011. And they have an all-hands-on-deck approach. In addition to our academic partners, they have organized an advisory council with world-class professors, Clay Christensen and Regina Hertzinger at the Harvard Business School, private partners like Microsoft, Cerner, CVS Caremark, and Vita Health, Dacia, and consultants in this space that are helpful, including San Francisco's own IDEO. The premise here is that we create a more competitive marketplace where applications that meet the needs of physicians at the point of care can be made available and rendered possible because those systems ride on a framework that will allow for their operability. This will be a breakthrough, in my humble opinion, as we look over the next several months. Pay close attention to our good friends at Harvard. On the issue of privacy and security, I thought to share with you the picture of our privacy officer, Joy Pritz, who is a world-class expert on the subject and who's been tasked specifically producing recommendations tomorrow that will be made available in public testimony at the Health IT Policy Committee on how we establish and embody the principles of privacy and security in health IT moving forward. Particular emphasis on consumer choice or consent, how we handle sensitive data, and what we do to promote interstate exchange in this perspective of policy for privacy and security. You can see in the broader list of stakeholders a who's who of healthcare IT who are focused on a tiger team today to answer these questions. Public input is welcome and encouraged along the way. I now move into the connectivity realm, and that is to focus on data interoperability. Our core flagship program in this regard is the Nationwide Health Information Network, and I will particularly focus on the Connect program, which is the technological underpinnings, the open source collaboration, if you will, that is encouraging public and private stakeholders to come together to promote the safe, secure exchange of health data. What's exciting about this program is not just the technical advances they've made, but the process they've chosen to adopt to move the ball forward. This is an open collaboration by design. Every quarter, we are hosting a codeathon where developers from the private, public, and academic sectors come together to gather and understand the latest challenges that are confronting this, the need for the Health Connect program, and that they can come together and develop applications that are all freely available for reuse, again, by the private and public sectors. The next codeathon, by the way, is scheduled in the month of September over at the Mayo Clinic. These are a traveling roadshow. First opportunity for collaboration, I might add. Any of you who'd like to host a codeathon can visit connectopensource.org, click the button to say you'd like to host a codeathon, and you will certainly be welcome in offering that venue. Now, does this Nationwide Health Information Network deliver results? Our first adopter in this program was the Social Security Administration, and they had an administrative use case. It is unfortunate that those who suffer from a disability have to wait a significant amount of time to process their disability applications with the Social Security Administration to get the services they need to live a healthier life. Thanks to the Nationwide Health Information Network Connect program, I'm pleased to report in our pilot program a 42% reduction in time, processing time, compared to the statewide average for those in what I would call the analog environment. That is, the caseworker in the Social Security Administration calls for the medical record, asks for the copy to be sent in or faxed in or what have you. It's then not complete. They call back for more data and so forth. those providers that are in the Connect program where they can electronically communicate the data that's necessary have their judgments rendered instantly. Again, 42% reduction times in a academic literature cited on the slide for you to later review. It also means that we establish more nimble collaborations to execute on how data should flow in the near term. Now, for those of you who followed those 25 meaningful use requirements that I made reference to just a few minutes ago, it turns out that the core technical requirement to achieve meaningful use is essentially safe, secure email. The ability for a provider to send data to the patient, send data to the referring doctor, send data to the public health department, and so forth. And a doctor in public testimony said very vividly, I have a patient in Virginia moving to Arizona. That patient has luckily chosen a doctor who has the same software that I have. And that patient asked if an electronic copy of her record could be transmitted to that doctor in Arizona. We all said this is the right thing to do. I went to the software, this doctor says, and there was no button that said send data to colleague. They had to export the patient's file, attach it to regular email, send it over the public internet, open the file, import it into the system, and guess what? It actually worked. But the privacy and security heart attack that was heard in the room when testimony was rendered, that's not secure, led the doctor to say something very simple. Will you give me a technical spec to allow me to safely and securely email that patient's record so that I can achieve this patient's very simple request? We paused in the meeting. I'm in the get it done business, not in the meeting to have a meeting business. And we said we will focus on this problem. We will execute. We launched the Nationwide Health Information Network Direct Collaborative using an open platform, a wiki. Anybody could contribute, private sector, public. I don't care. Anybody wants to play, you're welcome to come. However, you have 90 days to turn around a technical spec through a voluntary consensus manner that will give a safe, secure email. We locked them in the proverbial room. Over 80 vendors and stakeholders participated. And yes, in 90 days, the collaboration, with very little government involvement, we simply did convening and hosted the website, the private sector achieved consensus around an SMTP-based protocol or a spec that will achieve this objective. This program will be operational this fall with prototypes in the field and I believe widely deployed in the spring so that providers can communicate safely and securely to achieve the meaningful use requirements by 2011. This is a spirit of entrepreneurship and innovation that we're bringing to the public sector, and it's born out of a very simple policy lever. Not government as rulemaker, not government as grant writer, government as convener. Bringing people together and encouraging them to find solutions that are in the spirit of the common good. And I'm so proud of the work of the NHIN Direct team. I want to particularly celebrate our project manager, Arian Malik, and Doug Fridsma, who made this possible. But more work to be done, and every one of you can visit nhindirect.org, learn about the specs, participate with the specs, offer to operationalize the specs. Here's the basic framework, by the way. Doctor to consultant, lab to doctor to hospital, doctor to patient. Simple, secure, direct. You want to go secure and simple? I'm going to go even one more on the simple framework. I had the honor and privilege of listening to the president's remarks in August as we were sort of dancing in the streets, proverbially, when the president announced to the disabled veterans of America, by this fall, veterans will be able to go to the VA website, click a simple blue button, graphically depicted on the left-hand side, and download or print your personal health records so you have them when you need them and can share them with your doctors outside of the VA. The CMS program and the DOD have joined this movement. While we look to have a framework for secure health exchange, let's start with basic rights to your data. And we start with government as model actor. We will provide our recipients the authority to have and control of their own health data, a flat file that they can download, and I hope, and you'll hear about this in a few moments, that others will make it available so that they can import that file anywhere they want and see a whole new ecosystem of innovation come out. That's the connectivity play. I'd now like to share a few words about the application innovation ecosystem before I sit down with Tom and take your very thoughtful questions. First principles we had in innovation was that the taxpayers have paid for data that sits in the proverbial file cabinets in Washington that, if released, could actually deliver value in ways we can't even imagine. Secretary Sebelius, on June 2nd, convened a forum at the Institute of Medicine where we formalized the launch of the Community Health Data Initiative. To prove the value of this concept, 3 months earlier, we asked a half a dozen entrepreneurs to sit down and say, if we challenged you, and oh, by the way, didn't pay you a nickel, or for that matter, a penny, could you improve or add new applications born out of the data that we had at HHS that could spur health improvement at the community levels? Our first customer, if you will, Microsoft and Google and entrepreneurs all demonstrated their wares. You can watch the video if you go to hhs.gov/open and click Community Health Data Initiative. You can watch the video, one of the most riveting meetings I have had the pleasure of attending. The example I cite with you on this graphic is that Microsoft said, hey, this is pretty simple. You have a quality database called Hospital Compare. And by a show of hands, how many of you visited hospitalcompare.hhs.gov? I'd say for those of you in the video, you're seeing it's a minority of the members of the room. This has a wealth of information. For example, did you know we track your patient satisfaction on how well you slept at night in the hospital room? I announced this remark, I gave my remarks on this slide when I was in New York City. So as a kicker, we did the analysis. Did you know that not a single hospital in New York exceeds 50% satisfaction rates on how well you slept at night? I had no idea. Microsoft said, hey, in our Bing search engine, if someone searches for a hospital, in the search results, we will bake in the data from hospitalcompare.hhs.gov. So you have it right at your fingertips. We don't really care, nor do we measure success, on how often you visit a government website. We measure success by how much impact the data has in your lives. By opening up the data, Google, Microsoft, and others have said, we can find new and creative ways to bring the data to you. I don't care if you get it through Bing or Google or whatever. I care that you're empowered with that information and that you provide the feedback to us about what new data would be more useful to you. It's also about our third dimension in policy. As I said earlier, typically when government spends money, we spend money in two traditional ways. We issue grants, or we issue procurements, solicitations. By a show of hands for the entrepreneurs that are in the room, how many of you participate in a government grant or government procurement? A number of you. For the entrepreneurs I meet in Silicon Valley last night, far fewer. There is a science and an art to grant writing and to RFP activities that is just foreign to a number of entrepreneurs. So our challenge is, how do we establish frictionless participation? Well, as part of the president's Open Government Initiative, which, by the way, was my first homework assignment as CTO before I was actually announced as CTO, on the president's first full day in office, he said, my unnamed CTO shall, and part of that was provide recommendations on open government. We established a policy framework issued by the Office of Management and Budget encouraging our agencies to use prizes in competition policy. The first lady was the first one to sign up, and she said minutes after the ruling was released, that she wanted to incorporate a prize in her Let's Move campaign to address the issues of childhood obesity. And one of her key pillars of that program is to close the information gap. I don't know what I'm eating from a nutritional standpoint. So we said something very simple. The Department of Agriculture has a database of 30,000 food items. How might we find a more creative way to bring that information to life? We issued a simple challenge. 95 applications responded to our call where we only had maybe $60,000 in prize money available. And those applications have been screened. I had my wife and my 3.5-year-old play these games to, like, you know, just tell me which ones are better, because I'm a judge on the contest. And I can't tell you the winners yet because we just completed public voting, but I can tell you examples of some of these applications, like Smash Your Food, which is what you see on the right-hand side of that graphic, you basically create a meal, you smash the food, and it provides for you the sugar, the salt, and the oil intake data that might help you understand what this means for your own nutritional choices. Oh, it's so cool. It's actually not that cool because my wife yelled at me about the meal I had the other night because she actually saw the game and said, hey, wait a minute, that's not healthy. It's pizza, whatever. I want to quickly run through, as I want to be respectful of our time, this slide is best left for your later review, but as you know, one of the most important components of health reform was establishing a framework for payment innovation within our system of reimbursement. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services will have a $10 billion Center for Payment Innovation. And while we are still working through the operations of that program and the mechanics of that program, I can assure you that the statute calls for explicitly four models of experimentation on medical homes, accountable care organizations, bundling payment, readmission reductions. These are policy objectives. And what I thought to do is summarize the technology implications. As Gretzky says, you skate to where the puck is heading. There are a lot of technology folks who try to convince me that I need to change today's reimbursement world in a manner that would befit improvements in applications that would service that could help improve care. But if we look to where the puck is heading, what are the applications of the future that we're going to look for? We need to have much more thoughtful approach to data, data-driven architectures. We got to think about care coordination, care integration, if you will. How do we track information across multiple dimensions? We also need to look at clinical transformation. How might we use decision support tools to provide the tools necessary to help clinicians at the point of care to make better judgments? And obviously in our nation's provider system, we have to expand capacity. How do we extend the reach of our physicians by leveraging information technology in new and creative ways? Again, I'll leave that slide for your later review. I believe it's a rich template for opportunities. This is a robust area of innovation. We've created the market conditions now through these pilot programs to think anew about how technology might improve our healthcare system. We also acknowledge the importance of advanced information technology infrastructures. And there's no IT infrastructure more relevant to healthcare, in my humble opinion, than our commitment to a mobile broadband revolution. It's just happening as in ways we couldn't even imagine. In February, I had the pleasure of celebrating an open collaboration called Text for Baby. Again, at zero cost to the American taxpayer, we launched a service that basically had a very basic proposition. If you're pregnant and you want relevant information to keep yourself healthy through pregnancy and over the first year of the child's birth, text 511-411, your due date, and you will receive three relevant messages a week, free of charge. This collaboration got the cell phone companies to waive their fees, got the content companies to offer their data, got the Centers for Disease Control to say, let's take a look to make sure these messages adhere to best practice. And already, in less than 6 months, over 60,000 people have signed up for this service. Not a nickel of taxpayer dollars. Simple, easy ideas. What more might we see come out of our wireless health revolution? We understand to get this right, we also have to address the regulatory challenges. The FCC has jurisdiction over wireless technologies. The Food and Drug Administration has jurisdiction over our healthcare system. How might we establish a framework to ensure that we are getting that balance correct, addressing the need to facilitate innovation while absolutely protecting patients? That's why I was so pleased that Dr. Hamburg at the FDA and Chairman Janikowski at the FCC established a joint statement of principles that was released to the public in just the end of July, a few weeks ago. It's also about research and development infrastructure as a key enabler of innovation. We believe our nation's universities continue to be engines of new products and services that will transform our healthcare system. We've just got to do a better job of tapping into that ecosystem. I didn't have the chance to visit yesterday Stanford's biodesign program, but I visited one of the startup companies that came out of biodesign, and that was the story of iRhythm Technologies, a little nimble entrepreneurial startup that came out of Stanford that had a very basic proposition. You could see the picture of the gentleman on the left of that graphic that had a traditional Holter monitor to address their cardiac arrhythmia, to monitor their heart rhythm. Yet to the right, you can see the innovation that iRhythm had established that created a simple wearable patch that for 2 weeks could capture the data necessary to identify if, in fact, you had an arrhythmia problem. What's really powerful about this case study is the reimbursement cost to the healthcare system is the same for both products. In other words, iRhythm innovated a perceivably better product at existing to lower cost. It is that intersection of what I would refer to as affordable engineering that we're going to see more and more of as we look to the intersection of these devices. That's why the Commerce Department initiated a competition called the I6 Challenge to look for how universities can commercialize innovations out of their campuses and into their local ecosystems by rewarding 6 communities that have demonstrated a new and creative approach to take those ideas and commercialize them to market. However, I would be remiss if I ended my remarks without describing the purpose of my remarks for you today. That is not just to lecture you on public policy, but to seek your support and engagement as we look to commercialize these ideas and to deliver them patient by patient, community by community. It's why we celebrate the fact that we have in the audience today several of our ecosystem partners who said we will stand up, not because there's a government law or a government grant, but because we believe this country needs to see innovations that intersect at healthcare and technology. That's why we have our friends and partners at the Health 2.0 community, Indu and Matt, who are sitting with us today, who have convened the Health 2.0 Developer Challenge, a simple platform that is inviting catalysts from nonprofit, for-profit, academic resources to leverage the platform and ask the question, how might we at the grassroots level spur breakthroughs and innovations powered by government data, if possible, powered by policy areas of interest that I've just described, any and all of the above? And I'm so pleased to announce today that one of the early adopters on this Health 2.0 Developer Challenge is with us today. Where's my man Don? Give a shout out to my man Don Casey in the back. Don is with us from West Wireless Health Institute, who's committed to driving innovations in healthcare focused on wireless applications that drive down costs and improve quality. West Wireless has announced a $10,000 prize for a personalized wireless health ecosystem. And they're not alone. The Markle Foundation announced, as I said earlier, that Blue Button program the president announced for the Veterans Administration. Markle said, you get to have lunch with Clay Shirky if you could develop an application that can read that flat file and find a way to bring more life to that data to improve our veterans' care, and not just the veterans, but others who might replicate this model. Challenges big and small are available at the health2challenge.org website. I implore all of you, join the community of innovators. Participate in this program. Encourage and celebrate new ideas that we should take beyond the current slate of initiatives. I will be back in October to stand alongside the best and the brightest in this innovation ecosystem to celebrate those ideas that have come to the top from this early adoption, this early round of innovation challenges that we've seen. That's what we're here to say. We've got a policy framework. We've got grassroots activities. We hope we've gotten this right. And if we haven't, we will course correct with your feedback. Thank you for indulging me this afternoon.
Our thanks to Anish Chopra, United States Chief Technology Officer. I'm Dr. Tom Nesbitt, Associate Vice Chancellor for Strategic Technologies and Alliances, UC Davis Health System, and I'll be conducting the audience question portion of today's program. We have a number of questions here.
I'll be fast because I filibustered in there for the beginning.
Well, we have time. So let's get started. There are a number of questions asking you to expand on what you feel the role of early-stage entrepreneurs is in this, as well as small companies, in helping us realize this vision of a technology-enabled healthcare system.
I believe innovations will largely come out of our entrepreneurial ecosystem, and that the healthcare sector, more than any other, is in desperate need of innovations. Ergo, I am hopeful that our policy framework will tap into those small businesses and entrepreneurs so that they are encouraged and incentivized to participate in the system. And that's why I outlined the framework that we outlined today. There's core infrastructure, the role of government here, to support through infrastructure, getting the policy framework right in terms of the reimbursement rules and some of those challenges, setting constraints so that we're not harming patients. That is why we get the regulatory framework right, and we've got the privacy and security provisions. All of that is designed to catalyze breakthroughs. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to see breakthroughs from our more traditional partners, but I do believe the channel of entrepreneurship and innovation is ripe, and why I'm encouraged by the early indications today of the participation in things like health2challenge.org.
We also have a number of questions asking whether there are lessons that can be learned from other countries and how they've implemented technology into their healthcare systems.
Absolutely. In fact, our national coordinator for health IT, Dr. David Blumenthal, who I must say parenthetically is a rock star, Dr. Blumenthal is not only leading this effort with gusto, but he is also engaging internationally. I had the pleasure of visiting Spain during its tenure as the head of the EU. They rotate their heads every 6 months, and had the chance to address their digital summit, where they talked about a European digital agenda. And I'm pleased to note that health IT interoperability ranks amongst their top priorities in the European framework, and that we are actively looking for collaborations on how we might exchange best practices. There are obviously different models on how the infrastructure should be set up, but what's fascinating is there's a lot of collaboration. For example, what's a patient care summary? And we should have that conversation with our friends overseas. A clinical summary in one country should not be all that different from a clinical summary in our country. And so there's opportunities for collaboration and comparison in terms of various infrastructure choices that we're making.
Great. Well, obviously there's been a considerable financial and political investment into the idea that technology is going to transform our healthcare system. In your opinion, what are the greatest barriers to realizing this vision of a fully technology-enabled healthcare system for the United States?
I would cite three barriers. The biggest barrier of all is ensuring we have the right ecosystem that would enable or encourage these applications to thrive, and I would point to the work on payment reform. So if we get the macro conditions right, I believe the incentives will be such that we'll catalyze more breakthroughs than if we simply try to one-off these pilot projects in lieu of a market system that focuses on quality as opposed to pay for unit of service. And that's something that this administration, this president, is committed to, and we can talk more about that momentarily. The second barrier is, in my humble opinion, the need for innovation. So it is one thing to say we are going to incentivize the adoption of technologies. It's another to presume that those technologies are meant to be dynamic and to improve over time. If we ossified technology as it was when the president passed the Recovery Act, I will have failed in my job in service to the president in ensuring that we have a vibrant, dynamic system where doctors and nurses and others say, I want to access my technology this way, and I want it to deliver this value. So if we fail on the innovation vector and we simply ossify what was there at the time we encouraged this program, I also believe that would be a barrier that would limit the value. And obviously the bottom line, more fundamental barrier, is if patients don't trust that this system will allow for the security and privacy of their data, game over. We are absolutely laser-focused on ensuring the best thinking on privacy and security are coming to the table for this topic. It's got the president's attention from the top down. My colleague, the cybersecurity advisor, says I'm all in on this project. I've got my best people on it. David's got his best people on it. We have to get this right.
Right. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Today, we are speaking with Anish Chopra, the nation's first chief technology officer. Mr. Chopra is discussing innovation and technology in healthcare. a number of other questions have come in asking about the role of the patient and the consumer in this, and that in order for these technologies to be effective in truly changing the way healthcare is delivered in this country, it takes patients being willing to participate by wearing body sensors or recording information about what they're eating and those kinds of things. Could you say a word about how we can incentivize patients to be participants in this system?
I have a worldview about this question that has more to do with the success of our innovation ecosystem to understand patient needs as opposed to finding a way to force feed relatively bad product on folks because they think it's good for them. I'm of the opinion that if we get the design features right, it will naturally drive adoption. By the way, the same is true of applications in the provider side. There isn't a doctor I know today that doesn't have Epocrates on their handheld device. So anybody who says that doctors don't like technology hasn't visited a doctor that today accesses the very simple database that is, and I'm not making a particular product endorsement, but I'm just sort of stating the obvious. So I think this question is largely about how well do we understand the customer's needs and how well are we building products and services to meet their needs. And if we're not, then we got to go back to the drawing board and build again. And the beauty of a competitive market is that we haven't some miraculous genius in Washington figured out this widget is the answer to our prayers, and now we're going to, you know, force you to eat this widget or whatever. We're going to encourage the market to develop these technologies in a manner I believe will be seen as successful because patients will want them. And I am not convinced that the current suite of products on the market today sufficiently meet that test. That's why I've said in my barriers discussion, if we fail to innovate, we will lose out on those challenges.
Great. There are also a number of questions regarding security and privacy. And if you would just expand on that a little bit, but specifically there were several questions on the potential value of databases that could create opportunities for public health and other entities that may want to use data for syndromic surveillance or public health data. But the other side of that is the concern that those kinds of agencies would have access to data that are generated from electronic health records.
So the question here is, again, as I said, striking the balance between ensuring sufficient patient engagement on the question of what and how their data will be used, with the desire to see innovation in areas around the analysis of data to inform better judgments in cancer treatment, better judgments in public health needs, and so forth. I will answer this question in three parts. Part one, there are technical solutions around protections that are relatively new that allow us, for example, to tag pieces of data with your patient privacy preferences and have that data in its transmission throughout the internet, our networks in general, that they communicate your preferences. So in other words, we've gotten to the point now where it's technically feasible to carry your privacy preferences. You will refer to this as metadata. Metadata on data that would encourage the components of privacy. So from part one, technologically, we have made advances that I think create the conditions for more effective control. There is a policy discussion that is underway, and I don't want to give away the farm. The recommendations are literally going to be made available tomorrow. So I would encourage all of you to visit healthit.hhs.gov, where the Tiger Team will report out their policy recommendations about the right set of knobs, controls, and strategies to balance these pieces right. And so I'll defer there. But the third dimension, and the third dimension I think is mission critical, is we have to do more to understand the benefits of secondary use of data. That's a discussion that we haven't had as often in healthcare and is increasingly part of the discussion now that we are starting to see people say, well, wait a minute, if there is data, what can we do with that data, and how might we deliver more value out of that data? I'll just make a simple observation, and I just want to put it out there because I think it's an important just sort of perspective. I don't know how many of you shop at a whatever your food grocery store is, but I'm assuming there's some national chains that are here in the Bay Area. And I'm presuming that you have a card that kind of checks you in and whatnot. How tragic is it that the nation's retailing system has massive data mining capabilities to know exactly when to send me that Oreo promotion just at the right time when I go to the store? Because they've figured out everything about me. They know what works and what doesn't in terms of motivating my buying habits. Answer me this. The equivalent of the transaction at the checkout counter, if we were to treat a cancer patient's transactions, if you will, a dose of chemotherapy or another regimen, what percentage of that data is analyzed today in the same way that our nation's retailing sector is analyzed? Are you kidding me, Dr. Nesbitt? What's up with that? We've got to find a way to identify what works and what doesn't work. And that is in part, I believe, why we're having the discussion about the value of data in healthcare and the benefits from the secondary use. I think there's going to be a lot to be learned about how we mine for purposes of identifying improvements in the actual delivery system.
Great. You've mentioned significant incentives to physicians to adopt electronic health records, particularly the meaningful use. Given the fact that the participation rates in electronic health records are so low today, do you feel that these incentives will be enough, and or do you feel the timelines will have to be extended?
Actually, I have great confidence that if these pieces work in concert, as I've outlined them here today, which is the president's strategy, so it's not just one or the other. You cannot take the incentive program in isolation and say, does the introduction of cash change the equation? Well, the introduction of cash does some to improve adoption, but it's not sufficient. Then you want to ask the question, what are the broader objectives in the sense of payment reforms? What is it that we're trying to do with our healthcare system? As we introduce more and more of the pay-for-quality model, the natural byproduct of that is data should be captured and used in a manner that would allow you to deliver value. So add that dimension to the equation, and now you've got yet another catalyst. And oh, by the way, there's that third dimension, which I said earlier, which is if you build it and they like it, they will adopt it. So I'd say the single most important thing that I am contributing to the discussion, if I may humbly suggest, is the notion that we have to improve our usability in the products that are available for clinicians that are designed to meet them at their needs. I love playing with my smartphones and my various devices like our tablet. It's just such an enjoyable experience. In fact, it causes quite trouble at home when I want to play with my toys. I believe providers will have the same reaction if we build products and services that meet their needs. Now, what problem were we solving when we built version 1.0 of technology? The billing and documentation problem. How inspiring is that? I'm a doctor, and you're going to tell me that you're going to translate my words to some fancy codes that will help me get paid? Well, I'll buy that system because it'll get me paid better, but it's not like it's going to inspire me in my art and practicing of medicine to say, man, that really coded my documentation so well. But if there's a tool that gave me information about how treatment options for patients like the one in front of me are addressed with intelligence born out of an ecosystem that pulls data in a safe, secure way that informs me and gives me judgments that I find useful, like the Hippocrates example I cited, they'll sign up like hotcakes. So I am not worried about the timeline of adoption. I am not worried about the size of the investment program. I'm worried that we've got the right ecosystem that's building the products and services that will match up the market at the right time, so we will see those breakthroughs. And I have confidence, and maybe I'm just an optimist, that those introductions will be made in a timely manner. Both the traditional players will adopt innovative solutions, and new incumbents will come in to create competitive pressure, and we'll all benefit for it.
Great. Several questions about some of the populations that may not be able to participate in this right away, particularly rural populations, tribal sites, and other populations that may not have ready access to these technologies? How will that be addressed?
Quite the opposite. My challenge is to deliver breakthroughs and innovations where you might least expect it, because the use case is so much more valuable. I had the honor and privilege of visiting a number of care centers in Virginia that were rural in nature. Had we not had technology and connectivity, they would not have had access to the specialty care necessary to meet their needs. And there were early adopters of the technology because there was an immediate value case, providing the care that's needed for the patient in the area that they were available. I am confident, if you look at the full package of investments, the investments we're making at the Indian Health Service, the investments we made in federally qualified health centers, the additional reimbursements to Medicaid intensive clinics, you will see more breakthroughs. Can I just give you an example, Dr. N?
Yes.
In Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, the university has adopted 104 of the poorest homes adjacent to the campus, poorest homes, and has offered them 2 years of access to 1 gigabit of connectivity, and has challenged entrepreneurs to develop applications that can ride on that infrastructure that will meet the needs of the poorest of the poor for 2 years as a research study. And who was the first adopter, Dr. N, to this framework? The Cleveland Clinic. Even though they're physically only a few miles away from these young people, they knew they were miles away in terms of access. But by connecting and by building applications that will ride that infrastructure, they will have better tools and better capabilities than would otherwise have been available. Because we're trying to find this model, if the rich get richer and that's all we've done, I have failed. This president has tried to find ways to bring those innovations. By the way, Text for Baby is an example of an innovation that everybody can adopt. The poorest of the poor, rural communities, many of those individuals have access to cell phones. So we could talk more about that as we go. But I am confident we've got to find that right balance.
Great. What lessons can we take from some of the larger closed systems like the VA, Kaiser, and other places that can be extended out to the rest of the country?
That's a great question. And in fact, Blackford Middleton at Harvard just published a paper. I thought it was in JAMA or the New England Journal, and I will be corrected by whomever can tweet or whatever find the answer. But it actually did a thoughtful study of the economic benefits seen by the VA and the quality of care benefits seen by the VA over the last, not just a couple of years, but going back, I believe, a decade, to understand what is it that drove value. And I will encourage you to take a look at that report and to dig into the details to see how and in what manner they saw value. I believe that the DOD and the VA combined, as early adopters of a number of these innovations, will actually be catalysts for commercial and private sector benefits. I had the pleasure earlier today of visiting the Kaiser Innovation Center at Garfield, where they demonstrated just a whole panoply of innovations that are being that are both demonstrated inside their system and are actually operational in a number of their markets. And they're publishing those findings. And I am very encouraged by the spirit of openness and collaboration by which both the private and the public actors have come together to take those best practices and to make them readily available for others. If there are recommendations on how we can do it better, how we can scale what works, I'm all ears.
That's great. There are some questions about how providers can play a role as entrepreneurs in terms of, you mentioned one of those in your remarks about a physician saying, how can I easily transfer records?
Yes.
But is there a way that providers that come up with ideas can play a role in creating these new models of health information exchange or models of care or use of technology in their practices and make sure they're shared?
Three ideas. Number one, everyone who cares to innovate in this space should visit health2challenge.org. You will find at least one or more inspiring challenges where you can demonstrate your wares from the bottom up and the best and the brightest will compete and will celebrate you come the fall. Number two, if you need some money, the Veterans Administration is actively seeking innovative proposals called the VAI2 Challenge. You go to the www.va.gov/VAI and the number two. There are $80 million of prize funds available. I should have said this earlier. Thanks for the question. $80 million in prize funds available for the best applications that address the following four healthcare concerns. One, how we leverage wireless technologies to improve care delivery to veterans. Two, how we address the challenges of adverse drug events. Three, what we can do to address those veterans who suffer from polytrauma, which is a very unfortunate truth. And fourth, this is a bit of an odd one, how do we make the kidney dialysis ecosystem more patient-friendly? So you are all welcome to present your ideas, which leads to my third point. The SHARP program that we funded that I referenced earlier, the Substitutable Medical Applications Framework, the number one beneficiary of that program are doctors who want to build applications, but their IT department has said, "Doctor, no." This program will allow multiple applications to ride the infrastructure and can sit in parallel. And I got to tell you, I have a lot of physician friends, and every single one of them, because I'm the IT guy, tells me their brilliant idea of how technology is going to improve healthcare. If the Harvard team is successful, which I have every confidence to believe they will, any doctor, any developer who has an idea that can ride on top of a legacy system in a healthcare organization can build that app and have it available in the equivalent of the App Store. Why should there be one medication management application available at your health system? Why not 30? And let the clinicians on the front end choose which one is the best one for them to interact, presuming all of them interact with the systems at hand. That's what we're going to do to inspire physician and nurse innovations.
Great. There are several questions related to prevention. And a lot of what we're dealing with are technologies that help with ill patients. But what types of technology applications are there to encourage prevention, and how will those be incentivized?
I think the prevention question is a critical one. If you talk about pay for quality, obviously one of the best things you can do is prevent challenges earlier. And the question is, if the market incentives are there, there'll be more investments in remote monitoring technologies and other tools that will actually identify problems before they become acute. But there's not just the, I'm already in the healthcare system, I've been identified, I've got a chronic condition, and how do you help me manage better, which I think is a use case in and of itself. But there are all these innovations around health and wellness, which I alluded to, the Apps for Healthy Kids competition. You will see in short order the when we announce the winners of that, we'll likely have an announcement about phase two, which will be a lot more fun. Not to mention this was actually fun to begin with. And I believe you'll see this notion of prizes and competition policy as a policy lever. More and more of our federal and state and local partners will think of competitions and prizes. The Community Health Data Initiative, in large part, will catalyze those ideas in prevention because it's an obvious thing for a community to focus on. And we're going to be throwing more of those ideas into the Matt Indu Show as we proceed.
Well, unfortunately, we've reached the point of our program where there's only time for one more question. So
make it good.
Well, the question is, if we do this all right and we all of these things work, could you describe what your vision is of this system completely working?
I would suggest, and I'll defer to Dr. Blumenthal, who will be much more articulate on this notion. I'm the tech guy. So I don't want to speak to the healthcare vision, but I'm happy to contribute my modest 2 cents on the end state. That the right healthcare is delivered at the right time to achieve the right mix of cost, quality, and satisfaction objectives that are at the heart of our healthcare system today. And that's really the simplest framework for this work. Everybody deserves the world's best care. Everybody deserves that care is informed by the best judgments. All of those judgments are informed by the best data that's available for assessment evaluation. And that's the system that I hope my children and grandchildren will have access to.
Well, our thanks to Anish Chopra, the nation's first chief technology officer. We also thank our audiences here and on the radio. This program has been generously underwritten by the California Healthcare Foundation. I'm Dr. Tom Nesbitt, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than a century of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Well done, man. That was fun.